Our morning at today's daf in Avodah Zarah is Nun. We're on the very bottom of Mem Tesa Med Aleph. We're just wrapping up a really important sugya in the Gemara of Zevazeh Garem. When you have two causalities that create something, so how do we look at the result? Do we look at the result as being a creation of the Isser, or do we somehow negate the Isser? It's really, just in general, I didn't mention this yesterday, but it is a hard concept to conceptualize and just to put into some sort of construct, meaning that, in other words, there's not enough in one to cause it to exist, and there's not enough in the other to cause it to exist. And meanwhile, when I take the two forces and put them together to create something, so there is an opinion, not only an opinion, but it's the Gemara says it's the accepted halacha that zevzeh garm is mutter, that the result is going to be mutter. So why should that be? Meaning ultimately there is a contributing factor, a really important contributing factor that's going to make it usser. I'm sorry, that's going to make it exist. So why should the result be mutter? So there are definitely ways to say it, but it's hard. It's hard to formulate exactly how that works. But it works. In other words, zevzeh garm is mutter. And the Gemara now, the last thing we left off with yesterday is that's the halacha. And I'll just.
Is it safe to say that this is mutar as long as there's no component of it is from Avodah Zarah?
Well, the
that everything has a component, essential component.
Right. Correct. So in other words, the Gemara gave examples across the board, both Avodah Zarah and non-Avodah Zarah. But the Gemara says across the board, and Tosfos, in fact, yesterday, well, I didn't quote the Tosfos, but Tosfos says yesterday that it's across the board. Zevzeh garm mutter is across the board. So
even if component of it is from Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, that's the chiddush of zevzeh garm. And the Gemara says, I'll just read it again, the last lines of the page. So the Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Lach Rav Yossi. The Gemara says Halacha is like Rav Yossi, and then the Gemara tells a very short story. How Ginasa, the Izdaba Bezavla Davos Kochavim. There was a garden, and they used some sort of fertilization that comes from Avodah Zarah, meaning the item itself was worshipped, and now they're taking that Avodah Zarah, the Chetzer Shel Avodah Zarah, and they're sprinkling it over the field. And Shalach Rav Amar, Kamed Rav Yosef, Amar Lehach, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Lach Rav Yossi. So now the yield that the field produces, now is going to be going to have two contributing factors. One, of course, is the ground itself. The ground itself, obviously, a necessary contributing factor for something to grow. But also the fertilization. The fertilization is now a key ingredient in terms of causing the yield to grow. But yet, the Gemara says, but the halacha falls like Rav Yossi, and so therefore the yield is going to be mutter. We now turn to the top of Mem Tesam and Beis, and we start now with the Mishnah. A mission that we saw yesterday, and now we get to see it again. Yesterday we saw the mission because the Gemara was quoting it in the context, in the discussion of Zevzeh Garm, is whether being Asur Mutter. And here now we begin with the Mishnah. Natal Mimenu Eitzim Asurim Ba'na. If you take trees from the Asherah, so the tree that the wood you take off from the Asherah is going to be Asur Ba'na, meaning it's a Chefzer Shal Avodah Zarah, and Hizik Mehem is a Tanur, and now you take that wood and you fire up an oven with that wood. So Chadash Yuta, so if it's a new oven, so you got to break the oven. Now, as I explained yesterday, the first ignition of an oven actually finishes the oven. It's the finishing touch of the oven. And so now basically the oven now is finished through Avodah Zarah. And so therefore now the oven is really just nothing more than a reflection of the Avodah Zarah. It's actually finished by the Avodah Zarah. So Yutas, you got to break the oven. V'im Yashan, however, if the oven is an old oven, so Yutsan. So you just let the oven cool down, and now you refire it up again with wood that's mutter. Alpha Bosapas Asura Bahana. Now let's say while firing up the Avodah Zarah wood, so now you're baking bread in an oven, so that bread is going to be asur because now that bread was created through the fire. Nisarva Bacheris Kulan Asuros Bahana. Now, if that bread gets mixed in with others, it's going to be asur Bahana. And what about Bittul? We are going to learn together later in the Masechta that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, there's no Bittul. Meaning, when I say no bittul, I mean in a tarovis, in terms of a mixture. Meaning, obviously, we've been spending some time in the third parak talking about bittul Avodah Zarah, but that's a repudiation of Avodah Zarah. Here we're talking about bittul from a standpoint of tarovis, for mixture. There is no bittul as it relates to mixtures of Avodah Zarah. That's a point which the Gemara is going to make really clear later in the Masechta. But in the meantime, however, if it gets mixed in with others, all of them are going to be asur bahana. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Yolechana Liyam HaMelech. So Rabbi Lazar says, well, look, you got benefit from Avodah Zarah, but here's what you can do. You can take the value of that benefit, transfer it onto money, throw the money into Yam HaMelech, and you're good. So Amar lo, in pidyon lavodas kochavim. And the response they say to Rabbi Lazar is, no, you can't be poda. In other words, the avodah zara, the iser of avodah zara is non-redeemable. And so therefore the avodah zara is in the bread, it remains in the bread, and therefore it's going to be awesome. Not only menu karkar. The Gemara over here gives a very similar example of this idea. Instead of an oven creating bread, we're going to be talking about a karkar. Karkar is some sort of instrument that's used for sewing, for weaving. And so they take the karkar. It's a piece of wood. It's a piece of wood that was taken off the Asherah tree. And it's now a weaver's tool. So also, and now you actually make some whatever material out of this tool. Asabana. So now the weaver's tool is that which formed that which you wove, and therefore it's going to be asabana. I'm sorry. The Mishnah step by step. So the kirkur is asabana, meaning the actual instrument is asabana. Now, aragbo sabegat asabana. If you wove a fabric, so that fabric is also going to be asur b'ana. Nis'ari b'acherem 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 kulan asur b'ana. So let's get it gets mixed in into a mixture. And let's say from that now, one of them falls out and falls into another mixture. Now in Allah, we do have this concept of what's called sfeik sfeika, the double doubt, meaning it falls into one mixture and then from there, one of them separates and falls into another mixture. It does more or less sound like a sfeik sfeika. Is the Mishnah teaching us that there's no such thing as sfeik sfeika as it relates to Avodah Zarah? Perhaps. Again, the Rishonim discussed it. I'm not going to get into it right now. But Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yolech Hanali Amamelech Amr Lo Ein Pidyon La Avodas Kochavim. And again, the same dialogue between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says you could be poda, and the Chachamim say you cannot be poda. Okay, so we have two examples in the Mishnah, oven baking bread, and the weaver's instrument used to make a fabric. But basically, it's the same idea. But Tzricha, the Gemara says, but really, both points are necessary. Why? Because the Iyashmin and Kamaisa. Because let's just say that we have the first example of the bread. So Behakam Rabbi Eliezer Mishum Debeina Kagamra Pas Kalile Isura. Because consider that although the wood you use for fuel for the oven is coming from the Asherah tree, and it's true that you're benefiting from that wood, but at the same time, simultaneously, the wood is also getting burnt and getting destroyed. So you aren't getting benefit from the Avodah Zarah, but concurrently, you're also destroying the Avodah Zarah. So there, you could imagine Rabbi Eliezer taking a more lenient position of, oh, you know what, it's redeemable. Because anyway, you're destroying the Avodah Zarah. But in terms of the weaver's instrument that you took from the Asherah tree, where there, the item is still there. So in other words, the garment that you produced is a clear result from something which not only was Asur, but still is Asur, it's still there. So I might have thought that Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't take this very lenient position of, oh, just simply pay for the benefit that you received and throw that money into the Amamelach. And then the Gemara just simply goes the other way. The Iyashmin and Kirkur, now if I only had the case of Kirkur, Bahakam and Rabbanan, Avapas, Emamodule, L'Rabbi Eliezer Tzricha. And if I only had the case of the weaver's tool, where there, the Chachamim will take a hardline position because the instrument is still there. But if I go back to the bread, maybe the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Eliezer. Anyway, you're destroying the Avodah Zarah, so just simply redeem its value and send that money to the Yam HaMelech. So the Gemara just simply has to use both examples to illustrate both how the Chachamim take their hardline position and Rabbi Eliezer takes their lenient position in both cases. I'm Rabbi Chia Berei Rabba Bar Nachmini, I'm Rav Chista, I'm Ziri, Halacha Ki Rabbi Eliezer. So the Halacha falls like Rabbi Eliezer, Gedami now in another version. It's just a slightly different Nusach. I'm Rav Chista, I'm Rabbi Abba Bar Rav Chista, Hachi, I'm Ziri, Halacha Ki Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says that these examples of Halacha does in fact follow like Rabbi Eliezer. I'm Rav Adar Ba'ava, Loshano Lapas. Now, as far as following the Halacha like Rabbi Eliezer, where you're talking about now redeeming, so that's only in the case of a bread, Ava Chavis. Let's say you have yayin, a barrel of wine, and it gets mixed up with other barrels. So then Rabbi Eliezer will not just simply allow you to simply take the value of that barrel of wine that gets mixed in and throw that money into the Amamelech, meaning only in the case of bread is Rabbi Eliezer ready to be lenient, but not in the case where the Avodah Zarah is mamish there. Rav Chista Amar Afilu Chavis, Muteris. And Rav Chista takes the position that no, if we're talking about a Tarovis, if we're talking about a mixture, so basically now you were looking at is a case where, at least in principle, there's Bittul. Now, The Chachamim blocked Bittul, because again, it's Avodah Zarah, and there's no Bittul when it comes to Avodah Zarah, Bittul Patar Rovis, but principally, fundamentally, there is Bittul. It's just that the Chachamim blocked it. And now, what Rav Chista is maintaining is that Rabbi Eliezer, since it is principally Bittul, even though not in practice, but since it's there, at least the potential for Bittul to occur, so then even in such a scenario, Rabbi Eliezer would now allow you to take the value of that barrel of wine, transfer that value onto money, and then throw that money into the Yam HaMelech. Ha'ugavra, the Gemara, again, tells a very quick story. So exactly this happened. In other words, he had one barrel of Yain Nesach, gets mixed in with a bunch of other barrels of wine. Also coming to Rav Chista, he goes to Rav Chista, Amar Shkol Arbezuzo, Shtei Benara, Vinishtari. And Rav Chista, Lamaisa, not only preached a particular position, but practiced it as well. In other words, Halach Lamaisa. He said that you could take the value of the wine, transfer it to money, and throw the money into the Yam HaMelech. Ketza Mevacha. The Gemara here talks now about the Bittul of Avodah Zarah, vis-a-vis specifically as it relates to the Asherah. Meaning, we already discussed earlier in the Masechta in terms of taking a Tzelem and how to be Mevatel the Tzelem, breaking off a piece of the Tzelem, but now we're talking about the tree and the Bittul of Avodah Zarah as it relates to a tree. Now, again, just quick reminders in terms of Bittul of Avodah Zarah. Again, we're talking about Bittul in terms of repudiation. Negation of the Avodah Zarah, not Ta'arov, it's not mixtures. So the basic Yisod that we already dealt with earlier is that can only be done by a Goy, cannot be done by a Jew. Okay. So Ketza Mevala, so how is Bittul occur? So Kirsum. So what the non-Jew can do is he could take off a piece, some splinters off of the tree, and vizirate. Or you take some of the foliage off of the tree. Or you take a stick, could even be a leaf. These are all negations, repudiations of the tree as being an Avodah Zarah. And now the tree is no longer an Asherah. However, Shipa. So, but let's say he manicures the tree. Right, the little pruning. So, litzarka asura. Shalola sarka mutaris. So now it depends why he's doing it. So if he's doing it to make the tree look nicer, okay, so he's shining his Asherah tree. I say by way of analogy. In other words, okay, but clearly that's not repudiation. He's not negating it. So if it's litzarka, if it's to make it look better, the tree look better, so then that's not bittul. But if it's shelo litzarka, but if he's trimming, he's pruning, because he wants whatever's coming off of it, so that's negation, and therefore that is a bittul of Avodah Zarah. Now, in the Mishnah, he takes off little splinters. If he prunes it for its own purposes, so the tree does not become bittul as a result of this. What about that which he now cut off from the tree? So osan shapayin. So in a scenario in which the tree is not mevutal, what do we say about that? The trimmings that he cut off. So mata alem. So pligi bar Rav Huna. So machlokas amaraim, whether or not those shearings that he took off is going to be mutar aser. Tanya command the amar mutarim. The Gemara quotes a brisa that says that in fact it is mutar. The Tanya, the brisa reads, "Ovi kochavim sheshipa, avodas kochavim litzarko." If you have a non-Jew who is pruning and straining out his tree, but for the purposes of the tree, he v'shafeh mutarim. Sorry. Wrong conjugation. Litzarko, meaning for his purposes. Sorry. So for his needs, so then he v'shafa mutar. So then, that is a negation of the Avodah Zarah, so that means the tree itself is mutar. And obviously, the shearings that he took off are going to be mutar as well. Litzarka. Okay, there we go. But if it's for the actual tree itself, so he, asur, the tree still remains mutar. Sorry. The tree still remains asur. V'shafa'eha, however, its shearings, mutar would be mutar. However, if a Jew tries all of this, none of it's going to work, because again, as a basic principle regarding bittul of Avodah Zarah, the negation of Avodah Zarah, so it can only be done by a non-Jew, can't be done by a Jew. And if a Jew attempts it, not only does a tree remain a chefsar shel Avodah Zarah, but anything he takes off also is going to still be have a status of chefetz of Avodah Zarah. Itmar Avodah Kocham Shinishtabra. Let's say you have the Avodah Zarah, the tree, and it breaks on its own. Now, it feels a little bit like deja vu, and it should feel like deja vu, because quite frankly, this is an issue that we discussed earlier in this perek about Avodah Zarah Shenishtabru Me'aleha. So it sounds like what we're having over here is a repeated machlokas, but oddly enough, it's not the same Amoraim who are arguing it. Previously, we had it as a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and here, as we're going to see, it's going to be a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. There could be a way to distinguish between this case and the previous case. So anyway, see the last Tosos of this Perek, who discusses maybe a way to distinguish between our discussion that we're about to have and the discussion we had previously. But anyway, let's see the Gemara. Itmar Avodas Kol Chavish in Shabru. So let's say you have the pieces breaking off the tree on its own. So in other words, it was a natural break. Nobody broke it. Rav Amar Tzarich Levatol Kol Kisa V'Kisa. So in other words, that in of itself is insufficient. What a non-Jew has to do is that he has to go over to every piece that broke off, and he has to be Mevatol every piece that broke off. Shmuel Amar Avodas Kol Chavim Eino Betela Ella Derech Delasa. So the only way that the Avodah Zarah is going to be batal is only if it breaks off in the manner in which it grows. The Gemara says, what are you saying? Adarabba. Gederech Delasa Mimevatla. So what? In other words, in the way in which it grows, it doesn't become negated. In fact, you remember, not so long ago, we talked about the foliage coming down from the tree, and the Gemara says, since that's so natural, and that's such an expected portion of what a tree does, it sheds its foliage. So the Gemara says that the leaves falling down is for sure not mevutal, meaning because that's derech kedelasa, that's the way it normally grows. So ella hachikamar. So the Gemara says obviously what we need to do is give a different way of how Shmuel is saying it. Ein avodas kocham tzrich levatel ella derech kedelasa. Right. In other words, if the tree has leaves falling off, and just using the same example. If the tree has leaves falling off in a manner which is expected and natural, so that requires bittul. Meaning the leaves that come down from the Asherah tree require bittul, because that's derech kedelasa, that's expected. But if the tree breaks in an unexpected manner, it doesn't require bittul. And again, we'll go back to the argument the Gemara made earlier in this perek. Look, if the tree can't even save itself, right? I'm treating the tree like a god, right? The tree now is a deity to me. If the tree can't even save itself, how can it save me? And so therefore, if it breaks in an unnatural manner, that is considered a bittul of the Avodah Zarah. The goy mistama would be mevata. Now, interesting over here again, the Gemara over here does not treat this machlokas like it did earlier in this perek. The Gemara now entertains the idea that maybe the issue, what's that issue over here is, whether or not pieces of an Avodah Zarah are still worshipped, meaning you have an Avodah Zarah. Fragments of the Avodah Zarah now fall off of it. Are those fragments still worshipped as well? And the Gemara now is suggesting that this may in fact be the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. But the Gemara immediately rejects. Lo, dekule ama ovdin l'shvarin. Now, everyone agrees that fragments are in fact worshipped. V'hacha b'shvir yishvarin kemifligi. We're talking about where not only a fragment came off, but that fragment then becomes more fragmented. Marsav Shivay Shvarim Asurim or Marsav Shivay Shvarim Mutarim. And the Gemara says that's the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Ibai Sema Dekuli Ama Shivay Shvarim Mutarim. Or the Gemara says maybe no. Maybe if we're talking about fragments of fragments, everyone is in agreement that that's totally mutar. V'achibah Vodas Kocham Shel Chulios V'Hedjah Shiach L'Achzir Kamiflugi. We're talking about where it is an Avodah Zarah that can be disassembled and you don't need an expert to put it back together again. Okay, in other words, in IKEA furniture. I'm sorry. What's it called? I know every trip for IKEA for me is like hours and hours of work after. So the Avodas Kocham Shechulios Behejon Shiachal Achzir Kemiflugi. So we're talking about Avodah Zarah that is disassembled, but could be put together by not an expert. And so under those circumstances, Mar Saver Kem Dehejo Achal Achzira Lo Bitla. Since it's easy to assemble, okay, I take IKEA out of the discussion. Since it's easy to assemble, so therefore, the fact that it fell apart is not a big deal because we could just easily put it back together again. I don't have to call anybody. I could do it myself. And therefore, lo bitla, omar sav, eino vaz kochavim betela, ela derech gedelasa. Dahainu orche, ha alav gedelasahi, ain't shrich lavata. But in other words, because it comes apart, by virtue of the fact that it came apart, even though, yes, I can easily put it back together again, but still. In other words, if it's something which is natural, again, like foliage coming off of a tree, so then that's not mevutal. But if it's something like, even chulios, even if it's something which is segmented and could come apart, but I didn't expect it to come apart, and by virtue of the fact that it came apart, means that I am no longer interested in making this my God, lowercase g. Okay, so, and hajalach kolot salmim, and that is the end of the third parak of the Masechta. And 3/5 of the Masechta now is under our belt. And now let's begin this morning the fourth parak of the Masechta. Okay, the fourth parak of the Masechta, a couple of introductory points as we start now learning a little bit about Avodah Zarah. Right, there is, for us, you know, in 2018, so how much of Avodah Zarah do we actually see and witness with our own eyes? So I understand that you can point to some countries around the world where Avodah Zarah is still practiced and, you know, and with a lot of intent. But we don't see much of it. The Gemara earlier in the Masechta told us that Avraham Avinu had a Masechta Avodah Zarah that was 400 prakim long. 400 prakim long. But in other words, his whole culture was enveloped in Avodah Zarah. And so therefore there were many different types of Avodah Zarah that he needed to know about. How many Avodah Zarahs do we need to know about? Meaning, when I say we, I really am talking about now the editors of the Mishnah and the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Hanasi, the Amoraim, meaning they had Avodah Zarah, but they didn't have as much to look at. So the Avodah Zarahs they did have to look at, however, they analyzed, they studied it, and they wanted to know which aspect of it was Avodah Zarah, which aspect of it was Takrovis Avodah Zarah, meaning they basically used the rules of Avodah Zarah that we've been learning now, really mostly over the third parak, right? Remember, in the Masechta, the first two parakim were all the peripheral, meaning the Gzera de Rabbanas that were fashioned around Avodah Zarah. The third parak was really the first time that we discussed Avodah Zarah itself, and really just the basic guidelines of Avodah Zarah, Takrovis, Tashmishay, Bittul Avodah Zarah, like just the basic concept of Avodah Zarah. But now as we enter into this fourth parak, we're going to be talking Lamaisa. I mean, I say Lamaisa, I'm not talking about for you and me. But Lamaisa, meaning various types of Avodah Zarah that were common and popular back in the day. We're going to be spending all of today, or not all, but all most of today's daf, talking about the Avodah Zarah known as Markulis. Markulis was a popular Avodah Zarah at the time. An interesting question by Rabbeinu Tam. It's not in the beginning of the parak, but it comes up on Daf Nun Amud Aleph. Rabbeinu Tam is bothered by a question. If you want to follow with me, you can see Tosfos Divrei Maschal Avnei Beis Kulis. Hikshir Rabbeinu Tam, Ich Maskir and Shema. Meaning, Rabbeinu Tam starts off with such a basic question, simple question. What justifies me even saying its name? Meaning, how can I call out the name of this Avodah Zarah? Kevin Shaina Ksuva Batara the Prepared Galmisos Mashma Davra Av Vishem Elohim Achrim Lo Taskiru. Meaning, there's an Isser in the Torah that I'm not allowed to mention names of idols by their proper name. So there's a Avodah Zarah that we're going to be talking about all of today and tomorrow, and we're going to keep repeating its name again and again. And Rabbeinu Tam asked such a simple question: how can we even pronounce the name? So the Omer Rabbeinu Tam Dekilos Lashon Shevach Shema. So it could be that Markulis is not the real name, right? It's Kilos. Kilos means praise. And when we say Markulis, we actually give it a nickname. We deride it. In fact, we saw just a couple of days ago in the Daf that Shaketsa Shaksenu, that meaning that we actually have an obligation where we're supposed to actually make fun and give pejorative sounding names to the Avodah Zarah. So when we say Markulis, says Rabbeinu Tam, basically that's what we're doing. It's a pejorative version of the name. Vizel Markulis Chilov Kilos. Lashon Mar Deshkuta Perkiranasha Mar Dekanta. In other words, and Mar means the opposite of, right? Chilov, meaning the opposite of praise. So when we're saying Markulis, says Rabbeinu Tam, we're actually saying it's not praise, it's just the opposite. Okay. That is an interesting Rabbeinu Tam to start us off. Okay, let me give a quick description of what Markulis is, and it's just some interesting comments by some of the Mefarshim. Markulis is throwing stones. It's really simple. It's a rudimentary form of idolatry, where basically what we're going to do is we're going to set up, we're not going to do anything, but what was done is they set up three stones in a very simple pyramid structure. Two on the bottom, one on top of it. And then what they would do is then they would throw stones at it and create even a larger pile. And this was the idolatrous practice of Markulis. What was it? Meaning, what were they doing? What were they attempting to do it? Meaning, and just in terms of just simple understanding, like what was the goal? So then the Eri writes that the idea over here is that they were worshiping the ground, and obviously the stones are coming from the ground. So this is basically a form of ground worship, where you take stones and you pile them up and you throw stones in it. So Tiferes Yisrael, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, one of the more popular commentators to the Mishnah, so he writes, very interesting, he writes that, you know what they were? They were markers. Meaning that if you can imagine, if you have a good visualization of a traffic cop who's basically standing there with his arms stretched out and telling traffic where to go. What they would do is they would set up, again, the structure was two stones with one stone on top of it. It basically was a rudimentary shape of a person with his arms spread out. And basically the way they set up this Markulis god, this idol, is they would basically put it on along the road, writes Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, and they would be showing people the direction and which way to go. And if I may suggest, and again, this is wild speculation on my part, meaning the word marker may come from maybe a derivative from the word Markulis. Markulis, meaning that they were markers, they were just along the road in terms of directing people which way to go. Okay, some suggestions in terms of, just to help us understand a little bit better, what's with the rock throwing? what's with this idolatry of stone throwing? Okay, and
see along the road sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
You see,
yeah. Yep. And
idolatry.
Well, okay, and back in the day it was idolatry. Meaning, you're right. That's why I'm saying for you and me, right? A lot of this goes over our head.
Stonehenge,
okay, right. The okay, and what are we dealing with now as we enter into our Mishnah? Actually, a really similar discussion that we had in the beginning of the third parak, which is now that if I find stones on the ground with a certain configuration, do I now I assume that this was part of the markerless worship? Now, if it was, so what we're looking at over here is these stones now being a chefetz shel avodah zarah, and therefore I can't get benefit from these stones. Okay. And so really what we're looking at over here is the forensic evidence that we like saw in the beginning of the third parak. I see stones on the ground. They're configured in a certain manner. Do I assume that they were worshipped? Yes, no. So that's what we're going to be discussing in our Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel Amar Shalosh Avanim Zubitzad Markulis Asuros. So let's say you have a Markulis pile. Now the Markulis pile, like I described, is where it's configured like a pyramid, where it's two in one, right? Two on the bottom, one on top of it. But the main Markulis pile, however, remember, part of their worship was that they took another stone and they threw it on top, they threw it in the direction of this stone. And basically what you had is a pile of stones. So in other words, even though originally it was two and one, but as you continue throwing stones on top of it, so basically now it turned into a heap of stones. That's what we're going to call for this Mishnah, the main Markulis pile. That's the Iker. And then Rabbi Shmuel says is that, so there, you assume that all those rocks now were for the purposes of Markulis, and therefore all those stones are Asur Ba'anah. And then you come across, you do a little more discovery, and you find three stones within a certain proximity. Right? All we have in the Mishnah are the words, Zu Bitzad Zu. So the three stones are now next to, or right, yeah, adjacent to, the main pile. So, Zu Bitzad Zu, I'm sorry, Zu Bitzad Zu, Bitzad Merkulis, Asuros. So three stones that are adjacent to the main pile are going to be prohibited. But shtayim mutaros, but if there are only two stones, then they're going to be mutar. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. It's really hard to understand. Meaning, what's the significance between three versus two? We're not talking about the main pile. The main pile obviously started with three stones in a configuration. More stones were thrown on top of it. And so therefore, for the main pile, all those stones now are part of the Markulis worship. If I find stones next to it, what's the difference between three versus two stones? And we're not talking about where they were configured in a pyramid of two and one, because all he describes, Rabbi Shmuel, is that they're just simply three stones lying next to the big pile. So what is right now really difficult to understand is what is behind the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. Stay tuned. The Chachamim Omrim, Chachamim say, Sheniris Imo Asur, Sheniris Imo Mutaros. Really easy forensic evidence according to the Chachamim, and just we're talking about proximity. If it's within proximity, so then it's going to be considered part of the original pile. Somebody threw it, maybe his aim wasn't that good. Maybe it rolled off the pile and just, you know, rolled a little bit away from it. But in other words, if it's within a certain proximity, So then it's going to be Asr. And if it's not within proximity, so then it's going to be Mutter.
Okay. It's two stones.
It doesn't matter, two stones, three stones, one stone. Meaning proximity is really going to be the telling tale of what is the story with the stone or stones. Okay, now Bishlam Rabban Kasavri Ovdin Lashram near Zimo, Dikala Mamer Mine Nafal Asuras. Shainir Zimo Mutaris. Now the Gemara says, look, let's dovetail from the discussion we had at the end of the previous parak, which we just happened to have done. Meaning, remember by the Avodah Zarah where you have pieces of the Avodah Zarah break off. And do we worship the Shvarim? Do the idolaters worship the Shvarim? Do they not worship the Shvarim? So what we entertained in the end of the previous parak is there may be a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, but right now the Gemara is saying, let's assume that not only do they worship the stones, but even if one of the stones rolls off, they worship that as well. It's all part of their idolatry. And therefore, proximity is going to be the determining factor. If it's close to the original pile, it's Usr. If it's further away, it's going to be Mutter. The Gemara says that's fine. But Ella, Rabbi Shmuel, my Kasavar. But Rabbi Shmuel is really the head scratcher. Because he ovdin l'shvaru nafilu tartin ami litzer. And he ain't over him l'shvaru nafilu tlas nami lo. I don't understand. If our assumption is that they worship not only the pile, but any stones that may have rolled off the pile, so then even one is going to be Asr. And if they are not worshiping the Shvarim, meaning only that which is part of the pile is going to be Asr, and that which is not part of the pile is going to be Mutter, so then three would be fine. The Gemara says, I don't understand Rabbi Shmuel. What is the threshold? What's the difference between two versus three? I'm Rav Yitzchak by Yosef, I'm Rav Yochanan, be Adush, and Ishru, Mimenu, Devar, Akol, Asuros. So the Gemara says, look, let's start off with the following. When it comes to a stone rolling off of the markless pile, the main markless pile, so everyone's in full agreement that that's part of the Avodah Zarah. And if it's near a Simo, if it clearly rolled off of the original pile, everyone will say it's Asr. And look, I know, says the Gemara, that we just debated it at the end of the previous parak. But that's talking about things that don't normally break off. Those are things which were items where they were one individual unit. Here, we're talking about stones. So already, they're not connected from the very beginning. So the idea that we'll have a pile of stones, one will roll off, okay, but it's still part of the pile. And everyone's in agreement that the stone that rolls off is still considered a chesed shel avodah zarah. So keep pligi b'stama. So the Gemara says, but here's where we're arguing in the case of stam. Meaning, we don't know if it rolled off the pile, if it didn't roll off the pile. So now, bimiku ravos nami, le'ika, de'ika la'memra minei nafal, le'devra akol asuros. So the Gemara says, now if it's within proximity, now within proximity means what? Meaning, I didn't give any linear measurements, and to my defense, the Gemara hasn't given any linear measurements. So, but I haven't done so yet. Look at the top Rashi over here, Mikuravos. Kigon ba'ama v'chatzi ama. So maybe it's within an ama, maybe within a half an ama of the main pile. So then, again, ikala mamar minei nafa. So I could now easily argue that I know it's not on the original pile, but it's really close. And so probably comes off of the original pile. I didn't see it roll off, but again, there is enough compelling evidence that it rolled off of the pile, of the main pile. So then, according to everybody, would be Asr. The debate's going to be as follows. What if it's at a distance? Now, at a distance, so Rashi over here says, Arba Amos Devadi La Minei Nafa. So we're talking about where it's within four Amos. Right? The Bach changes a little bit, the Girsa of the Rashi. Besoch Arba Amos. If it's within four Amos. So now that's going to be the machlokus. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. Cool. Let's just slow down for a moment. Meaning the Gemara can't even wait till it finishes its own sentence. Vaha, bitzad markulas katani. The Gemara says, but wait, what about the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, adjacent to. You're telling me now that adjacent to means not directly next to, but somewhat a ways? So the Gemara says, my bitzad arba amos didei. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? That's how we're going to interpret the word bitzad of our Mishnah. The word bitzad of our Mishnah means within four amos. Okay. And we know in so many areas of halacha, four amos is significant. So if the Mishnah is using the word bitzad, it's not out of order to suggest that bitzad means within four amos. Fine. Now, okay, so the Gemara now takes a breath. Okay, so we are talking about within four amos. Rabbi Shmuel Savar Osa Markulis Kata Mitzah Markulis Gadol Shalosh De Damyan Markulis Asuros Ushtayim Mutaris. And Rabbi Shmuel says like this. And now we're going to have a much better way of understanding Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that the way that they worship the Markulis is that there was a main pile, and then it was the practice back then, says Rabbi Shmuel, that they would make a mini Markulis next to the major Markulis. If I may speculate, okay, again, everything I'm about to say falls under the category of wild speculation. So, okay, so I'm right, might as well. So if I may speculate, what was the significance of the configuration of the pyramid? So I go back to Meiri, which I didn't quote the entirety of the Meiri. So the Meiri writes that the reason why they chose this configuration is because they patterned themselves after particular constellations. Okay, that's the Meiri writes that. So the idea of Rabbi Shmuel that there's a major one and then there's a minor one next to it. So again, this is my wild speculation. It's worth whatever, you know, if I'm guessing right, that's great. Otherwise, you can ignore it. But in other words, but maybe over here, according to Rabbi Shmuel, so therefore there was like this major pile and this pile next to it, kind of patterning after, you know, constellation. You know, in the constellations, you have majors and you have minors. Okay. I may be right, I may be not right, it doesn't matter. The point is that according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's the way it was configured. So in other words, what you would have is that you would have a big pile of stones and you would have a small pile of stones next to it, and they were both treated as part of the deity and part of the practice of Markulis. So the Gemara says, so now we understand Rabbi Shmuel a whole lot better. So assuming that this was the practice, Shalosh de Damyan, Le Markulis, Asuros, Shtai Mutaros. So now when you find three adjacent stones, and again, when we say adjacent, we don't mean right next to, we mean within four amos. So now they would put this mini Markulis next to the major Markulis, and the Gemara says, and that was done, and that was the practice. And a mini Markulis has to be made up of three, because that's the basic configuration of a Markulis, where it's two with one on top of it. So the Gemara says, V'rabban et Sabri, and as far as the Chochamim are concerned, ain't no sin Markulis katam etzah Markulis gadol. It seems to be a machlokas in Metzius. You know, I'm always uncomfortable explaining the Gemara that way. It's not my Mesorah. But it seems to be that they're debating in terms of what the actual practice was. The Chachamim say, nope, that wasn't the practice. And there was only a major Markulis with no small Markulis next to it. Lo shna shalosh, lo shna shtayim. Doesn't matter if it's three, doesn't matter if it's two. Nirus imo asiros, say nirus imo mutaros. And therefore, the only benchmark, the only threshold that you have is whether or not it's within proximity. If it's within proximity, it would be Asr. If it's not within proximity, it would be Mutar. Okay. Now, Amar Mar, Biadush and Ashram Memenu Divra Kol Asuras. Now, if you saw the stone rolling off, you know, everyone is going to agree it's going to be Asr. Avanim Shenashram and Amar Kulis, Uriminu. Sorry. And the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, I'm bothered because of the Braisa. Avanim Shenashram and Amar Kulis, Neros Imo Asuras, and Neros Imo Mutaros. And Rabbi Shmuel Amar Shalosh Asur Shtayim Mutaros. So the Braisa says that if I see a stone rolling off of the main pile, so if it's still within proximity, it's going to be Asur. If it's not within proximity, it's going to be Mutar.
But it's rolling off.
But it's rolling off. Well, like, what's going on? Amar Eva Lo Tema Shenishu Ela Ema Shenimtsu. So Rava is going to do a little bit of editing of that Braisa. Rava says, no. Nobody saw it roll off. Rather, it was found. Okay. Savar Rabbi Shmuel al Shtayim Mutaros v'atayin Rabbi Shmuel Amar. The Gemara quotes another Braisa regarding Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says in this Braisa, Shtayim b'tfisa lo asuros, shalosh afilo muchakos asuros. So if there are two and they're b'tfisa, they're within grabbing distance of the original pile, so then it's going to be asur. But three, even if it's muchakos, even if it's at a distance, it's going to be Aser. Am a Rav Lokasha, Kan Tfisa Achas, Kan B'Shei Tfisas. So the Gemara says we're talking about the distance. In other words, if it's Tfisa Achas, meaning that there really is no separation between the stones and the original pile, it's within grabbing distance of the original pile, of the main pile, So then it's going to be usur, one stone, two stones, doesn't matter. However, shtei tfisos, if it's two grabbing lengths away from the original pile, so the Gemara says, so then under those circumstances, then number is going to be significant. Three is this is the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. Three is a mini markulus, and therefore it's going to be usur, and less than three, no. And hechidami deika gova bina bini. And the Gemara says, look, now you have like a little mound separating the main pile and the stones off to the side. So if there in fact was rolling, probably the mound stopped it. I find some stones on the other side of the mound. Okay, so if it's three, it's a mini markulus. And if it's two, it's not. Markulus ki agavni mihav. And then the Gemara says now, one last question within the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. And that is that look, he says now, he's teaching us that if I find three stones within a certain proximity of the main pile, and even if there's like a little mound separating the two, but still, Rabbi Shmuel says that it used to be the practice that they would set up a mini markulus next to the major markulus. So the Gemara says, but I don't understand. One last point that needs explanation. A mini markulus would be set up like the major markulus, right? Meaning the major markulus would be starting off with a pyramid, two with one on top of it. So in the mini markulus, shouldn't it be the same? And yet in the Mishnah, all Rabbi Shmuel is telling us is that if I find three stones, and they don't have to be configured in any manner, but if I find three stones, that's going to be usur. If it's a mini markulus, shouldn't it be configured? The Gemara asks that question. Va'atanya. So let me read the full sentence. Or markulus ki agav nemihave. Va'atanya, the Gemara says, but what about the braisa? Elo hein avne beis kulus, achas mikan v'achas mikan v'achas agameya. So here the braisa spells out what the markulus is going to be configured. The pyramid. Two on the bottom, one on top of it. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, shouldn't we see the mini markulus in that configuration? Amarava kitanya hi beker markulus. So the Gemara says no. That yes, meaning yes, the Bryce is correct. The original markulus, the main markulus, is going to be configured in that manner. And then stones are being thrown on top of it. The mini markulus that's put alongside it does not necessarily have to be configured in that manner. Okay. Beyanamaka charov. The house of Yanai HaMelech was destroyed. Yanai HaMelech comes up again and again. One of the later descendants of the Hashmonaim dynasty. And we're at a later point in time historically. The house now is in ruins. Also of the Kochavim, Ukim Ubei, Markulus. So along comes a bunch of idolaters, goes to the ruins of his house, and basically sets up shop over there, and they're practicing Markulus idolatry over there in that house. Also of the Kochavim Achrini, and the Lo Palchil Markulus. Along comes another group of non-Jews, non-Markulus idolaters, and Shaklina, they take the stones, the Chippu, Behem Durachim, and they basically use the stones for building material for roads, Ustartiot, and for various alleyways. So they basically took the stones, okay, it's in other words, it's what are they worshipping, these crazy idolaters? And along come the other group of non-Jews, and they do what we would refer to classically as Bittul Avodah Zarah. They're now, by using it as building material, that's a clear repudiation of the Avodah Zarah.
Is there intent to cry for Bittul, or just
an
act?
No, just an act. It can, right. It has to be an act. So now, Ika Rabbanan de Parshe, Ika Rabbanan de La Parshe. So now, should we walk down the road? In other words, the road now is constructed with Markulah stones. But Markulah stones that were taken by non-Jews and actually made the road with it. So some rabbi said we shouldn't walk down such a road. Some rabbi said it's not a problem whatsoever. Okay? And you had the walking group, you had the rabbi walking group, you had the rabbi anti-walking group, and okay. Right. In this, right. Right. So I'm Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan this commented, well, which way should I go? Should I walk down the path or not walk down the path? But Rav Yochanan says, I know who to look to. Benancho kedosh malach aleim anan ve'anan nifrosh mehen. So look, there's a really frum guy I know, and he walks down that path. This guy's referred to as Benancho kedosh. He's the son of somebody really holy. He's walking down that path. So now I'm not going to walk down that path. Okay, now my nehu. Now the Gemara says, now just out of curiosity, we'd like to know who this really frum guy is. So Benancho kedosh, Rabbi Menachem, Rabbi Simai. So the Gemara identifies the Amora, Amai Karilei. He wouldn't even look at the image of a coin. Meaning that we are not allowed to gaze at images of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and he wouldn't do so. Tosos is obviously bothered by the question, well, if this is an Isra for all of us, so then why is he so frumped? Why is the Gemara calling him now the Menansho Kedoshim, such a holy man? It's a regular Isra for all of us. Tosos suggests over here that maybe this is an image that is so ubiquitous that for the rest of us it's fine because, in other words, you can't exist in this world without looking at it. But in other words, for him though, even if something which is so common, so normal, but still, he will really make it his business not to look at any image, even one that is, that we're normalized to. Man tam de man de parisho, the Gemara now asked Danny's question, I don't understand. So, savra la ki hadam rav gira amarav chia bar yosef amarav, mi nain la takovis avos kocham shein la betelo olamis. Shenem rav yitzvedu la bapor v'yochlu zivchei meisim. Ma meisim la betelo olam av takovis avos kocham imein la betelo olam. Ah, so here, An interesting way to look at these stones. These stones over here are not the Chesed Shal Avodah Zarah, but they're Takrovis Avodah Zarah, meaning they're the means in which this particular idol is being worshipped, the manner in which they're being worshipped. And so as being Takrovis Avodah Zarah, really interesting, the Avodah Zarah itself can be negated, can be repudiated. But the offering to the Avodah Zarah cannot be negated. There's no bittul as it relates to Takrovis Avodah Zarah. It's not the first time we saw in this Masechta that we're going to be more chamor by Takrovis Avodah Zarah than we are by Avodah Zarah itself. Why that should be? It's really interesting. Hard for me to articulate why that should be, but the Gemara quotes the Pasuk and Idrasha. Mandala Parish Amar, so Be'ina Kein Penim Veleka. And the counter argument is, I agree with the premise of Takrovis Avodah Zarah. But Takrovis Avodah Zarah is only not subject to Bittul when we're looking at something that mimics and models the Avodah that we do in the Beis HaMikdash. Shechting an animal, we shecht an animal in the Beis HaMikdash. So if they do a similar activity towards the Avodah Zarah, that animal is not subject to Bittul. But here we're talking about stones. We don't have such an Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and so therefore, even if they make this as their Avodah Zarah, there is still going to be an opportunity for Bittul. I'm Rav Yosef Bar Abba, Ikla Rabba Bar Yirmi La'asrein. Rabbi Bar Yirmiyah was a scholar resident. So Asav Aisei Masnisa Biadei, and he brings in a Braisa, and the Braisa reads, Ovekochavim, Shehevi Avanim, Min Amakulis, Vechipa Bahen, Durachim, and either Tartios or Sartios, but either way, Mutaras. To turn now to Nunam and Beis, it's going to be Mutar. Yisrael Shehevi Avanim, Min Amakulis, Vechipa Bahen, Durachim, Sartios, Asuros. So the Braisa says, look, if the Nanja took the stones and built roads with it, good. Roads are fine. If we took the stones and built roads with it, no good. V'leis nagar v'lo bar nagar. There's no carpenter, there's no son of carpenter. It's an expression of the Gemara. It basically means none of us are smart enough to understand the Braisa. We don't have a chacham. We don't have the son of a Talmud chacham. I'm Rav Sheshes ano lo nagar ano v'lo bar nagar ano. Rav Sheshes says as by means of anivus, look, I'm not a Talmud chacham, I'm not the son of a Talmud chacham, but parkin alei. But I do understand the Braisa. My kushulei, what was bothering you about the Braisa? The Rav Gidl, meaning the Rav Gidl statement earlier of Takrovis Avodah Zarah, and these stones should now fall under the category of Takrovis Avodah Zarah. And don't we know that Takrovis Avodah Zarah is not subject to Bittul, right? Is that what bothers you? But I know the answer. The answer is being a Kain Penim, but like, no, the idea of Takrovis Avodah Zarah not being subject to Bittul is only when their means of worship is mimicking our method of worship in the Beis HaMikdash. But if it's not mimicking it, so then it could be subject to Bittul. Okay, so he had the solution.